Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war. Hello, my good friends, and welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. Today, we'll hear from participants in the recent methamphetamine, HIV, and hepatitis conference held in Salt Lake City, Utah. We'll also hear some disturbing news from the deserts of Utah, where a rave was raided by 90 armor-clad National Guardsmen and police. But first, I want to pay tribute to an American hero. This from the New York Times, Ashes to Fireworks send-off for an outlaw writer. Hunter S. Thompson indulged in numerous hallucinogenic fantasies over the years. This past weekend, one of them morphed into reality. His ashes were blasted into the sky over his farm, carried by red, blue, and silver fireworks. In front of a 153-foot monument that Mr. Thompson, the writer and avatar of gonzo journalism, designed himself almost 30 years ago. Mr. Thompson's family and friends, including Senator John Kerry, Lyle Lovett, Bill Murray, and locals like Bob Broaddus, the sheriff of Pitkin County, watched Saturday night as his ashes exploded with fireworks, lingering in great puffs of milky smoke, then vanished. Quote, "When the going gets weird, the weird turn pro," so said Mr. Thompson. Thus, 6 months to the day after Mr. Thompson shot himself to death at age 61 at his home here, did his family and friends produce a highly professional show, staged and choreographed by Hollywood and underwritten by his friend, the actor Johnny Depp, for more than $2 million. What unfolded here in the Rockies, just outside of Aspen, was the complete canonization of Mr. Thompson. At the close of the ceremony, Norman Greenbaum's 1969 anthem, Spirit in the Sky, rose from the sound system with the lyrics, "When they lay me down to die, going up to the spirit in the sky." The silky red dressing around the monument slowly unpeeled itself, revealing a rocket-like structure embedded with a dagger. It was crowned by Mr. Thompson's logo, a 2.5-ton red fist with two thumbs and a psychedelic peyote button pulsating at its center, a day-glow sight visible for miles around. Hunter's wife plans to inscribe on his tombstone, "It never got weird enough for me." And to Mr. Thompson, I say thank you for making my job possible. Okay, now we're going to get serious. The Methamphetamine, HIV, and Hepatitis Conference was held last weekend in Salt Lake City, and here is the executive director of that event. Mr. Luciano Colonna.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Luciano, there's a diverse grouping of thought here, if you will. People perhaps learning about aspects of methamphetamine they had never realized existed. Your thoughts, sir?
I think it's been very successful. I just saw a panel which was done by Dr. Paul Quick on HIV and among men who have sex with men who do crystal methamphetamine in San Francisco. And he ended his presentation with a slide of the Capitol. And what he said that what he was most impressed about was being among a group of Mormons and young kids with spiked hairs and tattoos and people from the health departments from San Francisco and New York, as well as from small health departments in Oklahoma and Wyoming and Denver, and that is the America in which he lives.
How do I, as a layman, my perceptions, I mean, I learned that there's much more than I even realized that spins off from or as a result of meth use and how it impacts our society, heterosexual, homosexual alike, that we are all in need of education to prevent many of these harms we speak of.
The real problem with any drug is the addiction. When one gets addicted to the drug, the solution to that problem is treatment. And if you speak to a law enforcement officer who's here today, if you speak to a judge who is here today, if you speak to a healthcare provider who's here today, they will all agree on the same thing. People tend to think that we can just criminalize our way out of this, and law enforcement has become the fallback strategy. Well, believe me, law enforcement doesn't want that job. First of all, they've got a lot of really bad people to go after. Not to say that, you know, there aren't addicts out there, drug users out there that aren't bad people, because there's certainly a lot of people out there that aren't drug users that are bad people. But, you know, it's taking all their time. And they don't have treatment facilities to drop these people off at. So they've had to start drug courts to deal with them. So the real issue here is why are people taking these drugs? And how could we prevent them from taking these drugs? And if by chance they fall under the spell of these drugs, we need to get them into treatment if they want, if they, you know, are willing to go. Now, if they aren't willing to go, if they're not ready to go, there are other services available for them, such as the harm reduction services that are out there. And harm reduction and law enforcement and treatment and prevention, at least in the community of Salt Lake, believe it or not, work very closely together. This is an unusual city. I know that most people don't expect to hear that from Salt Lake City, but we work very closely together. This is a place where if someone goes to a Crystal Meth Anonymous meeting and doesn't make it, they will refer them to the Harm Reduction Project.
I was quite impressed with their mayor, Mr. Rocky Anderson, and his bold stance taken. He almost sounds like a member of law enforcement against prohibition.
Our mayor is quite a guy. This is his second term. I worked with the former mayor before he came into office on introducing a diversion program for prostitutes that was harm reduction driven. And then when Mayor Anderson came on board, we immediately started working on the overdose prevention issue. He is against mandatory minimums. He is the former direct president of the Salt Lake City ACLU. So that's how hip this guy is. I mean, he really gets it. He just hosted an environmental summit with Robert Redford at Sundance. He does get it. He thinks the war on drugs is a complete failure. And he backs that up by the fact that drugs are getting cheaper, drug purity is getting higher, and more people are in prison, which seems like common sense to me.
Yes, and I think it shows the fact that a politician can be for change, can get himself elected, and still remain popular with the people, because the people are beginning to see that harm reduction, that we have to change this scenario. And I want to thank you for putting together this wonderful event, and I hope the folks out there will go to your website and learn more.
But we are going to have downstreams available, video downstreams of most of the sessions, all of the major sessions. They'll get to see some magnificent, magnificent speeches.
All right. And that website?
The website is www.harmredux.org.
It was indeed a wonderful conference. I want to thank Luciano and all the good folks who put this together. I want you to know that Rocky Anderson, the mayor of Salt Lake City, is scheduled to be a guest on the Drug Truth Network sometime in September. If you tune in to the Century of Lies shows on the net, that's at drugtruth.net, you can hear part of a speech given at the conference by the mayor. I want to advise Pacificans out there, programmers or whoever, if you'd like to get copies of these speeches and breakout sessions, questions and answers, I think it'd be worth your time. A quick listing from the dozens of sessions includes the history of methamphetamine, the Southeast Asian methamphetamine pandemic, home-based meth production in Russia, gay men who have sex with men, methamphetamine use and HIV, the California perspective, HEP and ICE, viral hepatitis and methamphetamine use, youth, methamphetamine use and harm reduction in schools, does stimulant use affect HIV progression, human rights and the war on methamphetamine, history repeating, methamphetamine use within the African American community, and Native Americans and methamphetamine. Next, let's hear from Judge Arthur Burnett, who was part of the policy discussion, Impact and Implications.
I'm the executive director of the National African American Drug Policy Coalition, which is a coalition of 23 black professional organizations which have come together to combine their efforts to bring about best practices and procedures in dealing with the drug problems in America, in African American communities, and to share the successes we have in African American communities to solve the problem for entire America. These organizations consist of 254,000 black professionals who will work together to try to reduce drug abuse in America and to prevent our teenagers from becoming involved in drug abuse and drug abuse issues. We are not for legalization or criminalization, but we are strongly for pushing a public health and medical approach to people who are really addicted to drugs rather than criminal prosecution, and getting them adequate treatment, and getting our legislators and policymakers to appropriate enough funds and money and to get more health-trained people to deal with the problem of drug addiction as if we were dealing with alcoholism in America. Also, one of the reasons I attended this conference was to emphasize that the concerns for methamphetamine should not be viewed in isolation as dealing with this one drug only, but should be looked at dealing with all drugs, and that the way we now approach dealing with methamphetamines and providing for treatment for that problem should be the same way we deal with crack cocaine, and indeed the long sentences for crack cocaine should be reduced, and we should deal with crack cocaine equally with methamphetamines and provide equal funding to deal with the drug problems, regardless of the type of drug, for all populations, regardless of race or ethnic origin.
I'm in Salt Lake City with Heather Edney. She's the managing editor of Junk Food Magazine.
Junk Food is a magazine that was started in 1993 in response to a lot of the bad information put out by Partnership for Drug-Free America and other organizations like that, who were trying to, you know, who were trying to, like, scare people into not using drugs. We started Junk Food because we wanted to give people, like, actual, real information about drug use so that they could then make their own decision about whether or not they wanted to use. We did this through the Needle Exchange Program in Santa Cruz, and we did zines on amphetamine, cocaine, heroin, a women's specific issue, and then we had two issues called the Books of Death, which were about overdose and HIV and hepatitis C.
Rather than lead people down the wrong road with incorrect evidence, it's more advantageous to the individual and to society to share truthful, useful information.
Exactly. When Partnership for Drug-Free America says if you smoke pot, you will then end up smoking crack, you begin to not trust that information because you know what's not true. You see other people smoking weed and they're not, you know, hitting the crack pipe the next day, and so you try it. And, you know, if you can't trust the information, then you can't trust the good information that may come out of it, you know, the real information. With Junk Food, we wanted to just give people, like, real, relevant information. The other thing is that we created this magazine for users. We were users ourselves, and we wanted it to be information that was relevant to us, like how to not overdose.
Next, let's hear from the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, drugpolicy.org, Mr. Ethan Nadelman. Ethan, we've been talking about it. There's a lot to learn, a lot being shared here. What have you learned, sir?
Well, you know, it's hard to know a lot about methamphetamine if what you'll have to rely on is the media or occasional people you know who use the stuff. And what's been so remarkable about this conference has really been a couple of things. The first one has been the sort of coming together in the same room where about a third or so of the audience is coming out of the harm reduction world. and maybe a third to a half. And then the other half is really coming out of a much more conventional approach, people concerned about methamphetamine and about AIDS, hepatitis, and looking for some new approaches, looking for answers, looking for, you know, new questions to be asked. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is just that there's panels and presentations here which are just eye-opening. I find that I have probably learned more in the, you know, 36 hours at this conference or what have you than I have learned in any 36-hour period in a long time. So this really has been a role model for how a conference can accomplish a lot of good.
You know, I'm a legalizer just outright, and I feel that change comes about incrementally, and certainly the truth brought forward at this conference will be of benefit to many people as the attendees disseminate this information across the nation.
Well, no, I think that's right. I mean, you know, the Congressman Souter, who launched that really hostile attack on this conference and basically revealed his true colors, which is to foreclose any really open discussion, to keep thinking as much as possible constrained within the box. But, you know, he's putting out this notion that harm reduction is all a Trojan horse for legalization. And I think what he fails to realize, first of all, is that the vast majority of people who support harm reduction are not comfortable embracing full legalization. But that secondly, for many people like myself who regard harm reduction as the fundamental approach we have to bring to bear on dealing with drug problems, that the question is, when you look at drug problems from a harm reduction approach, how does legalization fit into that? You know, we've come to the conclusion that legalization of marijuana is the ultimate harm reduction approach with respect to marijuana. With other drugs, it's a lot less clear. So I think, you know, what you have here is people beginning to really open up their horizons about how to deal with this stuff.
Okay, time for one more quick voice from the conference. Deborah Small of Breaking the Chains organization.
I don't really think that it's an coincidence that we're seeing a resurgence of methamphetamine use, which, as I learned this weekend, is not a new drug, but one that's been around for a long time. But I think it's not an accident that we're seeing a resurgence of its use and abuse in those parts of the country that have been most hardest hit economically by the downturn in the economy, by the loss of jobs, by the loss of opportunities. And in the same way that crack cocaine impacted poor communities of color, methamphetamine is impacting poor white communities. And my hope is that our response to that will not be the same type of punitive response that we showed with respect to crack, which did nothing good for the country and ruined those communities and the people in them.
We'll be back in half a minute with a report on the paramilitary raid on the party in the deserts of Utah. It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Euphoric mood changes, the rare triggering of acute psychotic episodes, the exacerbation of schizophrenic psychosis in predisposed persons, the lowering of cognitive and psychomotor performance, tolerance. In summary, a low risk profile is evidence. Time's up. The answer, cannabis, reefer, Thailand tea, Kona Gold. Despite the ongoing 90 years of drug war, cannabis is still grown, approved, and distributed by agents of the government of the United States of America. Bringing the philosophy of Palestine to the deserts of Utah, this past weekend, 90 policemen and National Guards stormed a rave party wearing flak jackets, helmets, and carrying assault weapons, which were liberally pointed in the faces of partygoers and organizers. Outrage regarding this incident are coming in from around the world, regarding these tactics of bullying, fear, and physical abuse. Only 100 years ago in America, if a party were to be raided and people arrested for having too much fun, heads would roll. What you are hearing is the audio from a video done at the rave by a participant. You can clearly hear the sound of a helicopter overhead. In a moment, you'll hear the dogs used to search the patrons of the event. What you cannot hear is the tear gas or see the beatings inflicted on those who thought they still lived in America.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I think they're serious. They got guns, man.
Yeah, they are, dude.
The following is part of a report filed by ABC's Channel 4 in Salt Lake City.
Good evening. Hundreds of partygoers are crying foul tonight over a safety sweep at a rave party.
It happened just before midnight last night in the Diamond Fork area in Spanish Fork Canyon. At least 60 people were arrested for various offenses.
Well, they're upset because they say authorities used excessive force to shut down a party. But if you ask the Utah County Sheriff, he'll tell you they were just doing their job.
Never seen anything like it. This is the most violent way I've ever seen a party shut down.
And then all of a sudden I saw people in helmets and I heard people shouting and yelling, and then all of a sudden the music quit.
And out of the corner you see SWAT teams closing in, catching many off guard.
Officers would throw individuals to the ground, sometimes two or three or four officers on one individual.
I was pretty appalled, actually. It looked like something you'd see on the news from a third world country.
Utah County Sheriff deputies say they did not use excessive force, but took the necessary measures to control a crowd of well over 500.
One of the major reasons, other than listening to the music, to come to one of these parties is to secure a source of illegal drugs.
Witnessed the show from the very beginning. People were just dancing, hanging out in their tents. There was no, from what I saw, no illegal activity going on.
But this image tells a different story. A table full of items confiscated at the party. There are weapons, counterfeit money, and drugs.
I want to point out, it looks like a card table, and there's about a dozen baggies arranged on the table with, you know, a quarter ounce in each. There's two counterfeit 20s, a couple of knives, and one handgun. I think for any crowd of 500 people, that's really not a lot. And to cap it all off, most of the drugs were confiscated by the security guards as the participants came to the event. And to reward the security guards, they arrested them for drug possession.
Last night we had a 17-year-old female who overdosed on ecstasy. She was treated there at the scene, but she was first observed by our people, not those that were in charge. The problem is that without the permits, there's not the proper oversight. Without that proper oversight, there are a lot of crimes that are occurring in these parties.
That one girl should start feeling poorly because she was in a party being raided by 90 heavily armed and masked paramilitary should come as no surprise.
The youngest arrested was a 15-year-old for illegal consumption of alcohol. Authorities say the landowner and the party promoter are not out of the woods. They, too, will be charged.
According to Utah County Sheriff, the party organizer did get a permit from the health department, but not from the county commissioner, which is required for a gathering of more than 250 people.
There are drugs at these parties, and there are drugs at rock concerts, and there are drugs at houses, and there are drugs all over the place. Raving is a celebration of being alive, and people choose to use drugs sometimes, and lots of people don't. There are so many people that do not use drugs at these parties because we go for the music, and we go for the people, and we go for the family.
It was like they were expecting a riot or war.
What kind of threat do we pose?
Full camo gear, bulletproof vests, gas masks, everything.
Hitting people with the butts of their guns.
It was within minutes that they had already made purchases, multiple purchases of ecstasy.
Salt Lake attorney Brian Bernard plans to seek redress in federal court.
It makes absolutely no sense at all to crash the party and to come in like stormtroopers.
The sheriff's deputies booked 23 of the 60 people arrested into jail, most on illegal drug charges. They also arrested the owners of the property and plan to pursue charges against the rave party promoter.
American justice on the march. Poppygate, bizarre news about the U.S. policy on controlling heroin, featuring Glenn Greenway.
This week, U.S.-occupied Afghanistan reestablished diplomatic relations with Colombia. The new official ties between the world's two most preeminent narco states were orchestrated by Washington under the aegis of fighting drugs. According to UCLA researchers, Opium production in Afghanistan has doubled every year under U.S. occupation and is expected to continue this exponential increase over at least the next 2 years. U.S. troop strength in Afghanistan has risen to 20,000 in light of rising military fatalities. 40 U.S. troops in Afghanistan have died since March, 74 so far this year, vastly more than in any preceding year of occupation. Meanwhile, in Vancouver, Canada's downtown East End drug ghetto, hot heroin is being blamed for 5 deaths last weekend. This is Glenn Greenway reporting for the Drug Truth Network.
Another honest man pays the price. Sadly, official reports from our federal government are sometimes slanted to give the administration's particular spin on an issue. Rarely do the researchers object publicly. This week, one did. The New York Times reported that Lawrence Greenfield, head of the Justice Department's Bureau of Justice Statistics, is being demoted. His sin? Objecting to the Bush administration's spin doctoring of a report on racially biased law enforcement. In April 2005, a study by the Bureau on racial profiling showed that Hispanic and black drivers were more likely to be subjected to or threatened with force than whites, more likely to be searched, and more likely to be ticketed. Dr. Greenfield wanted to include those points in the news release. His political masters just said no. They couldn't kill the report itself, so it was issued without a news release, guaranteeing that it would be ignored by the media and buried. Dr. Greenfield accepted a reassignment to a different bureau recently, rather than resign 6 months before he's eligible for his full pension. Now, the White House is looking for a more suitable replacement. The ad should read, "Morally bankrupt administration seeks ethically compromised researcher to replace one who had a conscience. Must be willing to mislead public and follow orders." For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
Hello, everyone. It's Loretta Nall reporting for the U.S. Marijuana Party from Alabama. And in the last 2 weeks, I've been from one Washington to the other. I started out in Washington, D.C., where the global drug war is exported from, and wound up in Washington State, where the drug war was apparently suspended in Seattle last weekend for the 14th annual Seattle Hemp Fest. It's somewhat ironic that Seattle is right next to Vancouver, where the DEA recently raided and arrested Mark Emery and two of his employees. Talk about Mark and his current situation properly dominated the event. There was no police interference thanks to I-75, which made marijuana enforcement the lowest police priority. Lots of police walked the path, but there were no arrests, and most everyone was openly ingesting cannabis. This is a statement to what citizens can do when they get involved in local politics, and it was especially refreshing for me to experience coming from the D.C. rally where the cops made things up in order to justify interfering with our rally there. There were huge crowds and beautiful weather, and many fabulous speakers, including Mark Emery via cell phone transmission, and I'd really like to thank all of the wonderful organizers who worked so hard to bring us this world-class event from year to year. Look for exclusive footage on Pot TV early next week. Pictures and a more detailed report will soon be available at usmjparty.blogspot.com. Once again, this is Loretta Nall reporting from Alabama. Until next time, y'all be safe and stay out of jail.
Okay, a couple of program notes. No new affiliates this week, but WXOJ up in Northampton, Massachusetts, is the first affiliate to carry our new program, Century of Lies. Thank you for that, my friends. And speaking of which, you can hear the Century of Lies program or any of our 100-plus programs that are online at drugtruth.net. If you're a cop or an agent of the DEA, CIA, or FBI, I've got $1,200 if you'll come on this show. If anyone out there would like to get copies of the CDs produced from this conference in Salt Lake, please send me an email, dean@drugtruth.net. And as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful. To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, on behalf of engineer Philip Guffey, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston.
Jap dancing on the edge of an abyss.